Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Eddie Jones can provide the explosive soundbite for which Roy Keane is renowned. Will he do it though? Will he?
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
All right, we're looking ahead to the weekend's football cross channel. We're going to be previewing three of the Premier League games and the big game in the WSL over the course of the next little while. We've got Mick in studio, we've got Cullum in studio, we've got Shane in studio. Very good afternoon to you folks. We're going to be joined by Lee Phelps very shortly. As we do at the start of every week, let's have a reminder of how we got on last week in who you got. The predictions were good for Shane last week. 6 points on the board. What did you get right?
I got City 3-1 exactly to beat Chelsea.
Oh,
and
sorry,
I was the only one who went for a United away win at Fulham. Everyone else went Fulham or draw.
Is a good score. We don't get too many sixes.
Yeah, you got all of the winners,
all the winners
outcomes correct and then one correct score. Chur got a correct score, an exact score as well. And Cullum, you got 2 points, so did I. Mick with 2 points as well.
Yeah.
Not much to write about.
I had Fulham to win. I had the 2-2 between City and Chelsea, I felt very good about when it was 2-1, actually.
I was ridiculed by Nathan Murphy last week, essentially ridiculed for picking United to beat Fulham away. I said, the run has to start at some point. They have to get a few wins in a row, and Nathan's like, not necessarily, Shane.
I think I said the same thing, Shane, to be honest.
Yeah. Really good impression.
It was a decent impression.
do you feel like they're on a run? We'll talk about them in a minute, but...
We will, but well, they've won three games in a row.
They were good last night.
Start.
Yeah. But then again, I was trying to figure out how whether Stoubouk rests were awful or not. Like, you know when you're watching that going, oh,
FCSB, FCSB, Mick. There's a lot of politics involved there.
Yeah, well, you reckon is 2 games away from getting a haircut, which is the positive news from a Manchester United standpoint.
Who is the TikTok guy?
TikTok guy who's not getting a haircut until Manchester United win 5 consecutive games.
Oh, yeah, I saw that guy, yeah.
So 2 games away.
All they needed to be told was they're the worst team in living memory.
That's
and all he started winning games. Rock bottom.
The overall table, Will actually got 3 points last week, so he's extended his lead at the top of the table.
He's unassailable
now at this point. So Will is going to win this. He's on 57 points. Man. Mick is in second point.
Start thinking about
second place on 50 points. Cullum and Phil at the bottom on 39, although you're only two behind Jer. What do you have to say for yourself?
Geez, I haven't looked at the table in a while now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a lie.
No, it's true. Because hence my reaction here. And that's very disappointing to see now, I have to say, Owen. But look, I live in extremes, I guess. Look, this time last year was the other side of the table, and now I'm living in the bottom.
Tottenham Hotspur in who you got really is the story of Cullum Buick, the history of Cullum Buick and who you got.
Can I mathematically win it still?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah.
Considering we normally get 2 points around and there's 12 on offer every week and it's only halfway through the season.
Has anyone ever got 12?
No.
John Duggan had the...
He had a nine week. That was
I remember the night.
Yeah.
So you never know is what I'm trying to say to you, Owen. You know?
Well, I was 4 points behind Owen heading into last weekend and one weekend we're all square.
We're both locked on 47 points. You God, the excitement, you couldn't ride it. Now, coming up this weekend, we're looking ahead to Bournemouth versus Liverpool in the Premier League as our first fixture. The slate of fixtures here is everybody's going for a Liverpool win except for Cullum and Will.
Now, the bottom and top.
Yes.
Guys going for the same score.
I admire it.
Would you say Cullum is potentially copying the exact scoreline of the, leader?
Why would I copy?
Because he's...
Oh, the results if I'm bottom of the table.
Because
I'd have to go for something else to get off the table.
Yeah, but you just picked the guy who's leading the whole thing.
No. I've never looked at anybody else in my life. In general.
I mean, Bournemouth are amazing and in brilliant form, so it's pretty obvious why you might...
the mirror is his only viewpoint.
It's obvious why you might pick Bournemouth to have a pretty good result against any team in European football, but
that's so obvious to everyone else.
To actually
Yeah, it's brave,
follow through
it's
into the team's message, lads, and say it's going to be one all. It's a big statement.
Listen, lads, I really appreciate the compliments, but I don't think it's brave in the slightest. I think Bournemouth have been excellent, and like Liverpool, I think we're, and I as a fellow who's bottom of the table, this is rich, like, but I think you can get carried away with thinking that it's going to continue like this indefinitely for Liverpool, that they've been so brilliant this season, particularly in the results section. But like, Bournemouth are just playing so well at the moment. Like, so they beat Forest by 5, mm-hmm. and then they scored 4 at Newcastle.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm just thinking the natural climb down for me would be...
The Newcastle game was first, though.
Yeah. And going backwards, yeah. The natural climb down for me would be they'll ease themselves into a draw before they lose the next game. I don't see a massive drop-off from those two games versus this type of game. And I'm going for a very close, in every sense of the word, draw here.
Okay, they've got a terrible record against Liverpool, but I suppose.
Yeah, but look at them this season. This is an unprecedented Bournemouth side.
Lost 3-0 at Anfield in September.
Yeah.
Last season, they were. I remember Semenyo scored after like 10 seconds against Liverpool or something. I think they lost that game 3-1 as well.
And, but like in September, they weren't the Bournemouth that we know now. Like, they're just playing phenomenal football, and I think they're going to have enough to get something against this Liverpool side.
Were you tempted to go up more goals?
No, I think they'll be very respectful of each other.
No, because Will went for 1-1 all, you see, Owen.
Oh, yes, of course. That makes sense. So the biggest scoreline here in terms of a Liverpool win is going to be 3-1.
You got the death stare, Colin.
To Kathleen and 3-1 to Nathan. The death stare for me. I can't multitask / concentrate there. So it's like
it's also radio. So
I'm confused and I don't really know what's going on around me in the studios there. 3-1 is the biggest margin of victory that anybody's predicted. So nobody's overly confident that Liverpool are going to go here and get a massive win. Which
that's why I think it's a brave call, because I think we're all looking at it going, Bournemouth can get something here. You know, it's like it is that sort of sense of their form is incredible. We don't think they're going to continue hammering teams 5-0 all for the rest of the season, but they are good enough, and this is not a good time to have to go and play Bournemouth away from home for Liverpool. The reason I went with Liverpool, and it's a 2-1, and that's been a very, very fond scoreline for Liverpool so far this season. They tend to struggle, they tend to just stick at it, and the reason they're top of the league is because they're scoring late goals, they're coming from behind, they're coming from drawing positions, and they're winning games. They do the odd thing like they did last week, or the game against Ipswich or the game against West Ham, where they'll go out and dominate a team, but more often than not they're kind of struggling and, you know, really staying at it and winning and getting 3 points that way. So I kind of feel like Bournemouth are that sort of good team where I can't see them doing any more than that. But at the same time, like, you'd be mad to write off Bournemouth's recent form. You'd be mad to write off the entire story of the season for Liverpool until they stop doing it. Do you know what I mean? It'd be like backing against the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. It's like, maybe you think the Eagles are better, but until you see the Chiefs not winning it, you can't be going against them. And I think it's the same thing with Liverpool for me. But like, we should just talk, like, we talked loads about Liverpool. Like, we should talk more about Bournemouth. Like, their performances in the last two games. I didn't see obviously the Forest game wasn't on TV, so you just saw the highlights of that. But I watched them against Newcastle, and they were absolutely unbelievable. Like, they were just every single thing about them. It's just clicking, you know. And you think, like, Justin Kluivert, right? Did anybody see him as more than a kind of a potential player who's more famous than he should be because he's somebody's son?
Yeah.
Do you know? And you see him playing in the last 3-4 weeks and he's one of the best players in the Premier League. You know, whether that continues or not, again, we don't know. But it's such a surprise to me. And that's just a sign of a really, really good coach. You know, that they seem to be getting the most out of everybody.
What more does he need to do with his career for them to be considered on the Mount Rushmore father-son football combinations?
Well, what are the challengers? The Schmeichels?
And the Maldinis.
Maldinis, Cruyffs.
What's he say?
Haaland.
Haaland's, yeah.
Now, Haaland's dad isn't...
So Haaland's dad is the Justin Kluivert at the moment. They're going head-to-head. If he can usurp Alfinga, then they've gone ahead of it. Well,
Schmeichels are good. I don't know. Kasper's had a very good career.
The Thurams.
Thuram would be up high.
Good ones.
Yeah,
either came
Ronnie Whelan and Ronnie Whelan Senior.
There you go.
Are they even father and son? I don't know.
Either came on for his for Gudi Jansson Senior to make his Iceland debut, but I think that's where the majesty ends.
Okay.
Yeah,
but we want to keep an eye on in the future, like Ashley Young's son.
Ashley Young. Yeah.
Ashley Young and Ashley Young are definitely one for the future as well.
If he helps Bournemouth get top four, then he reaches the Donnellan family, the Donnellan dynasty in Galway, or what's the most famous Kerry dynasty? I suppose the O'Shea's, but. Do you know,
Donnellan.
Michael Donnellan, three generations, the only family that had three generations of All-Ireland winners.
Didn't know that.
Do you want to know Iriola's aggregate score against Pep, Arteta and Ruben and Howe this
just
season.
half the Premier League.
And this is random. That selection turned random.
I do want to know the answer to that question. Manchester City, Arsenal, Tottenham Hotspur, Manchester United, and Newcastle United.
Tottenham and Manchester United don't belong in that conversation. At the moment, let the lads guess first.
So, what is Bournemouth's aggregate score against all those sides this season in the Premier League?
Let the lads guess first.
How many games? So, how many times have they played them? Like about 7 games or thereabouts?
No, it's one game each.
Oh, on average, score.
So 9-5.
It's further, or it's more impressive, sorry.
11-5.
You're nearly there in terms of the pro, but the against is even more impressive.
Wow.
Right, just tell seven.
I would say 12-2.
Scumbag.
It is 12-2. Right,
yeah.
12-2 because he's side of 3. But 12-2, and so they won all those games. And it's 12-2, so it's not just like...
That is impressive.
They're not Kevin Keeganing their way through. Like, this is such a well-structured side. Oh, yeah. And it was yourself, actually, who mentioned the young fella they got from Juventus. Forgive me for the pronunciation, the centre-half's name, Huijsen.
Oh, yeah, Dean Huijsen, yeah.
Yeah, Huijsen. And he's, what, 19, 20 years of age? Brilliant at the back. Mm. And then they have mainstays in midfield who have been with Bournemouth for a long time. Yeah. But I suppose their front four are fairly irresistible at the moment. You can't really take your eyes off them. And that's without their main striker as well. You know, Tara's had to step in, so Evan Nilsson's been away. And, like, it was, a couple of weeks ago, Evan Ferguson was linked with them, and I thought, like, at this stage now, that's a remarkable move for Ferguson. Never mind Bournemouth, like. Yeah. That's how good this side is.
Is there a danger, when you look at the Premier League table, like, obviously it's been a remarkable run since November, but is there a danger? So Bournemouth are 7th on 40 points. But say Fulham back in 10th. They're having a pretty decent season themselves. They're only 7 points behind them, 3 places behind. Like, we could still remember this Bournemouth season as just a 2-month period that was unbelievable. They could still fall off, have a bad run, finish 10th or 11th in the Premier League table. And you look back and say, that was weird, wasn't it, that middle of the season where Bournemouth had? Whereas the Forest thing is more sustained.
Do you reckon?
No, they just hammered
5-0 last week.
Like, I know,
destroyed them out the gap. I don't think that would happen with Bournemouth because there's not one dominant player. There's not a one reason.
Evan Nielsen. Like, he was coming into form. I remember he scored like last minute equaliser against Philly. He was brilliant for the next 3-4 games. He's been out injured.
Yeah,
it didn't matter. You know, and he was he's the final piece of the puzzle.
Like,
you know,
it's like with Tara.
I was reading my text.
With Tara's adapted and then some. Do you know what I mean? They haven't needed him. But it was worth making the point twice. That's how little they need him.
Can I say one more thing on the Cliver thing before we move off, right? Uh-huh. So watching that Newcastle game, right? I know it's a couple of weeks ago, but we haven't talked about Bournemouth, right? Okay. Did anybody notice or get frustrated? I'm going to just preface one more thing. I think Darren Fletcher is a very good commentator. I think he's a bit underrated, actually.
No offence, bud.
In general. No, I do. I actually think he's generally underrated. I like his cadence over the course of a game. He's a good, excited commentator, right?
Yeah.
They spent a lot of time talking about Patrick Kluivert's time at Newcastle in that game. But they were talking about it like as if, like, you know, he was Jackie Milburn and Alan Shearer melded into one, like, you know, and this, like, the great Newcastle legend. At one point they said, Patrick Kluivert will look at this performance and have mixed feelings. It's like Patrick Kluivert doesn't even remember playing at Newcastle. He was absolutely useless there. He was completely finished. He was there for about 6 months, I'd say, and was like a complete non-factor in both his history and that club's history. But they were just trying to do it. It was like as if, you know, oh my God, I can't believe... Erling Haaland has scored against Nottingham Forest, the place his father was a journeyman out there for 2 seasons. You know, it's like, come on.
No, it's fair.
He scored 6 Premier League goals for Newcastle, Patrick Kluivert. That's a lot more than I thought.
And that was when their own players were fighting each other. I'm sure that was around that time when Boyer and Dyer weren't having any of each other.
5-6.
Yeah. He was done at that stage.
I remember.
Like, it was one of those exciting signings that went to nowhere. Like, yeah.
Right, it's time to bring in Lee Phelps from William Hill to bring some sense to this conversation. Lee, how are you keeping?
I'm really good, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying it. It's great. I was just chuckling along because I thought the same thing about that Kluivert storyline. But the media loves a storyline like that, don't they? The fact that he scored more goals at St James's Park than his dad within about 30 minutes was quite nice as well.
Yeah. Are you enjoying this Bournemouth run? Are you on the hype train?
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? We've got a really diehard Newcastle fan in the office, and he said, and I've heard a few people say that Bournemouth are the best team that he's seen at St James's Park when they gave Newcastle a shellacking the other week. fantastic, isn't it? It's great to see. I mean, you just know that the run will run out at some point, but while it's happening, you're just kind of looking at them and from a betting point of view and seeing where you can make the most of it. I mean, I think it's really interesting looking at this weekend's fixtures, by the way. I mean, I think the Saturday games, I think the shortest price of any of the teams is Newcastle at home to Fulham at 4-6. I think Liverpool are the same sort of price at Bournemouth, but I think it's one of the most wide open Saturday Premier League fixture lists that we've seen for a long time. There's a decent argument for a sixfold on draws all the way through. It's probably, you know, a huge price for that. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but unbelievable Saturday fixture list.
Are you finding it difficult at the moment from your perspective in terms of trying to predict what's actually going to happen? Because as we spoke about just there, even Bournemouth in isolation have kind of really thrown the cat amongst the pigeons in the last 2 weeks. Like Newcastle, you could have pictured that as maybe a bit of an aberration last week, and then they go and do it again against Nottingham Forest last weekend. So I presume it's been tricky to actually try and figure out this middle tranche of teams who are all performing so well this season.
Definitely. I mean, there's not many teams that you can really say you will absolutely trust at odds on, for instance, for an Acca. Not many at all. You know, look at Tottenham. I mean, look at Tottenham at home to Leicester. I mean, that's, you know, even though Tottenham have been poor, you think at odds on, Tottenham at home against Leicester, yeah. And then you just look and you think, oh, right. So from a punter's point of view, obviously, it's like you kind of like your head's in your hands. Obviously, from a William Hill point of view, those guys upstairs are absolutely loving it. Because it's hard to predict for the punters, isn't it? So, you know, it depends which way you look at it. But, yeah, very difficult to predict. Like I say, Saturday. I mean, Forest, Brighton, Bournemouth, Liverpool, 7-2 Bournemouth at home. It wouldn't be a huge surprise if they nicked that against Liverpool. Everton, Leicester, not really sure. I mean, Everton are odds on at home. I mean, who wants to back Everton at odds on? Ipswich, Southampton, don't know. Newcastle, Fulham, you'd probably think Newcastle should win that. Wolves, Villa as well. So, you know, there's some really interesting games. And obviously Sunday's great as well.
Yeah, I think we're actually going to go to Sunday for our charity bet. We've been unbelievably close over the last couple of weeks. Mick, in fairness, I'm not sure if you can call it good charity bets when they haven't come off, but to be fair, they've been big odds and they've been very, very close. I think we've been a goal out in two consecutive weeks.
Southampton, I was having a goal to spare in the Forest -1 and Chris Wood to score bet, and then Southampton of all teams scoring two goals in the last 10 minutes.
I know. You've almost thought that one's won at half time, haven't you? You're thinking, I know. And yes, there is such
Liverpool
a thing.
Last week, yeah.
There's a big debate over whether anything can be called a good bet if it's a loser, but I'm firmly in the camp that you can still have a good bet if it's a loser. It's a value bet. I still think it can be a good bet. So yes, I'm with you on that one. Let's keep saying that to ourselves.
Yeah, well, we're going to continue this week and go for Arsenal versus Manchester City, but we're going to simplify things and just go for the draw, I think, on this one, which I believe is 13-5.
Yeah, look, I like that as a bet as well. I mean, I think, you know, I think City are the most informed team in the Premier League right now. Top of that table, if you like the form table. Obviously, Arsenal, you know, very good at home as well. Both got goals in them. You know, you look at the recent results and there's been a lot of draws in those matches. I think only that Arsenal 1-0 win last time they played at their place is the only win that has been in the last four games between these two, including the Community Shield. So, yeah, look, I don't mind it at all, to be honest with you. It's, you know, it's gone 5-2 at the moment. It's a decent, I mean, I think 11-4 City is obviously well worth a look. I've put a bet builder together on this game, because I think there's goals in it. One thing that I found interesting recently is that this race for second place. I think probably all in agreement that Liverpool would have to throw the league away as it stands now. So you're looking at who finishes second behind them. If you're going for a straight forecast bet of Liverpool to win and Man City to finish second, that's 9-2. City are 7-2 to finish second. Arsenal are 3-1 on. I think if City got a win in this, then that could really open that race for second up. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying it makes it really interesting. Now, the bet builder I've gone for is Havertz to have at least one shot on target, Gabriel to be carded, Phil Foden to score or assist, and both teams to score. I know people will be thinking Havertz, but look, I'm not saying he's going to score. I'm just going to say he's going to have a shot on target. 14 of his last 15 games, he's had a shot on target in all competitions, more than any other Arsenal player. Gabriel has committed seven fouls in each of his last seven games and been booked in the North London Derby, booked against Man United in the FA Cup, booked against Inter in the Champions League. So seems to really get stuck in the big games. Foden, you know, is really coming back into form. More goals in January than anyone else. five career goal involvements against Arsenal, so him to score or assist, and they're both teams to score. I just think, you know, I think Arsenal from set pieces and from open play are very good. City only kept two clean sheets in the last 10 away league games, but have also scored in all but one of the last 23 on the road in the Premier League. So I can really see, you know, that this being a pretty goal-filled match, and happy for it to finish a draw. You've got your Bet Builder winnings boost. You've got Impact Sub on your side as well, which obviously if you back any of the players and they go off, the player coming on carries on your bet. And I must mention one thing this weekend for anyone who's logging on. It's our first February freemium weekend. What that means is that when you log on to your William Hill account, you'll see you'll have either a free bet or a free spin or something else. You have to opt in to take advantage of it, but you'll see that on Saturday and on Sunday it's freemium weekend. So when you log on to your William Hill account, you'll find something free in there for you to use across various sports or in gaming, whatever you like to do. But everything crossed 5-2 by the full-time whistle. It's a draw, and everyone's happy.
Absolutely, and no disrespect to your bosses, Lee, but hopefully the chaos ends and we start predicting these things correctly over the next couple of weeks. Yeah. Thanks a million. Chat to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Who you got on Off The Ball is with William Hill, gamblingcare.ie. Let's move on to the next game this weekend. We're going to have a look, I believe, at the Manchester United fixture. No, we're going to go to Arsenal City. So the only person calling a Manchester City win this week is Kathleen McNamee. Not sure who she supports and if she's trying to jinx against her own team or if she's a Manchester City supporter, but she's going for a 2-1 Manchester City win. John's going for Arsenal. Mick's going for Arsenal. So are Phil and Will.
I just asked for a charity bet of a draw, but anyway.
You're going for a 2-1. The rest of us here in studio are going for a draw. Yeah, the one thing about this fixture, like I actually hadn't realised that Manchester City are top of the form table, because all I can see, and I think I mentioned this in every Who You Got, is that the 2-0 collapse at Brentford. Like that still shows signs of frailties. And even going 1-0 down against Club Brugge the other night, is it still there? But either side of that collapse against Brentford in the Premier League, they've had two wins either side of it. So yeah, in the last five fixtures, they're top of the league. I just wonder if there's still this mental block for Arsenal against Manchester City, even if it is a weaker version of Manchester City than they would have played last season. Granted, they're on their way back up at the moment, but I still just think Arsenal and Arteta looks across the touchline, looks at Pep Guardiola, and they still get a little bit spooked by what they're seeing. They had a phenomenal opportunity last season to go and really take the game to Manchester City, to go and win that title, and they didn't take it. They settled for that draw, and eventually Aston Villa came along and caught Arsenal and ended the title race on that occasion. And I think maybe people think about that Aston Villa game, they don't really remember what the opportunity was on the day for them against that Manchester City team, who weren't amazing that day either. And then also you go back to the start of this season, and sure, Arsenal had a man sent off and there was uproar about Leandro Trossard getting his second yellow card that day. But I do wonder, after what happened to Manchester City in the intervening few months at this stage, did Arsenal need to go completely gung-ho in defence on that afternoon? No. Complete after-timing. I accept complete after-timing. And we didn't know what was about to happen for Manchester City. But I still think Manchester City live a little bit rent-free in Arsenal's head.
Yeah.
And it's concerning. And that's why I wouldn't be overly confident for an Arsenal win this weekend. In fact, I would just finish off by saying, when I've been looking at the Champions League draw this week and I see that Arsenal are in that same little quarter-final draw as Manchester City, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, I just can see a carbon copy of last year where it's like finish second in the Premier League, maybe third, and a quarter-final exit in the Champions League.
The Champions League playoff draw has been made as we've spoken here. I don't know if you've seen it yet. Man City will play Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
And then you've got Bayern Munich in that corner as
You've got Celtic against Bayern Munich.
So it's Celtic-Bayern Munich.
Oh, right, okay. Crackers. I have to say, though, like, you know, Man City, Real Madrid, what a beautiful fixture. You know, while I'm having my couple of weeks off of the Champions League, you know, and sitting there watching, you know, just as a spectator,
true,
as a pure spectator. Not that I'm not a spectator anyway. I'm not, like, you know, on a team. But
you can just relax.
Just relax and watch these two great fixtures. That aside, right, I think it's actually worth coming back to the game earlier in the season, as you mentioned. Because when Arsenal needed to, when that was 1-0 and City started that game brilliantly and Haaland scored that goal, Rodri scored the goal, didn't he?
No, Haaland did.
Haaland scored the goal. Rodri got injured, a couple of minutes after. And how good Arsenal were for the few minutes when they got the two goals and they were just gung-ho and they were what they're supposed to be. And then the manager, who, look, I'm always critical of here, and it's not as if he doesn't have his good points and so on, right, but I just wonder about his mentality. I really do. I don't feel like he has the top class coach mentality. He might be a top class coach. He got into his head on that game, and they went to this insane extreme. That, fair enough, it nearly worked, it didn't, but they weren't giving themselves a chance. They were always inviting the annoying crap thing that happened at the end of the game to happen by the way they played. You know what I mean? And it's just that that really worries me, is that he didn't trust his team and his players enough to even just play just the littlest bit of football, just enough to just take the pressure off for a minute here and there. And they were obviously under just strict instructions to absolutely not do that. And that, like, that's why I ultimately agree that you would be worried about this, despite the fact that, I don't know, I don't know what you think, but for me, I'm still to be convinced that City are back in any kind of form. I didn't think they were great against Chelsea. Chelsea have been on the decline for a few weeks now as well. And other than that, they've had an incredibly easy fixture list, and they're coming into a really, really hard one now. They've got an insane few weeks. We talked about it last week. Now they passed the first test, obviously, and they did what they had to do in the Champions League as well. So maybe they are, and it'll just take a few weeks for us to realise it, in the same way as it took us a few weeks to realise that their decline was real the first time around. But at the moment, I'm unconvinced. So I do think Arsenal can win it, but I would share your concerns massively.
And I mean, we're always at the danger here of, like, predicting what's going to happen this weekend, which is impossible. Arsenal could absolutely go out there at home, scrape a win against Smith. They could be brilliant and get a win. Like, we don't know what the ceiling is of someone like Ethan Nwaneri, and even in the short term, like, he could go out and just have a stellar conclusion to the season, and all of a sudden Arsenal looking at this unbelievable talent who's just had a phenomenal end of the season. Somebody like that could step up and just blow a couple of teams away between now and the end of the season. So I'm not ruling that out, but, like, on a Friday afternoon with the information that we have, I would be surprised, pleasantly so, but I would be surprised if Arsenal's season at the end doesn't look very similar to how it ended last season.
Yeah. And they'll go about it differently, I think. So Arsenal last season were a lot of fun, actually, the first half of the campaign, and then got real serious at the end to their detriment. And I think he's continued that this season. And I've had this thought and verbalised it as much throughout the campaign, is that, like, Arteta strikes me as a guy who's, like, prematurely tense this season. And he's like, from the start, we can't make any mistakes. We were so nearly there for the last two seasons. I want you in it from the start. And the problem is, like, he's trying to sprint this marathon, and it was like, we got to be dead serious. So I think, like, the core of Arsenal is quite strong, and there was that, you know, period in the season where their set pieces were phenomenal. But, like, their centre-halves are brilliant. They have a brilliant midfield. So the core is excellent. Defensive stability, brilliant. Like, this is George Graham stuff in many ways. They're really lacking not just flair, but that ruthlessness in the final third. And it feels to me that Arsenal would nearly be ready to do it all next season if they can improve that part of it. But the problem also is, I don't think Arsenal supporters have the patience for that. Well, because it's been, what, 5 years?
The club might not either. And I don't mean that they'll sack him, but I wonder if the momentum is lost.
What do you think of that? So I've considered that over the last few weeks. I just don't think that's a reasonable thing to do whatsoever. I think...
Do you think he's doing it?
I'm sure it's not on purpose. Like, it was just...
No, sorry. Yeah. I'm talking about sacking Arteta.
I wouldn't sack him. I don't think that's a reasonable idea at all.
My theory, do you see validity in it? That's what he's doing this season?
Yes. However, I also think that, again, we all know that we're kind of after timing it at this stage. We've seen how this Premier League season has developed. If Arteta knew that this is how the Premier League season was going to go, I wonder would he have been as serious as he was at the start of the season? Because he's thinking to himself, geez, 92, 93, 94 points potentially is what we're going to need to get to win this. Liverpool could win the rest of their games and can probably get to a similar enough number. But I don't think anybody predicted what was going to happen to Manchester City this season. He was definitely relevant to this fixture this weekend. He was definitely in his head about, how do we beat Manchester City? It's a two-horse race for the title this year. And as it turned out, they both got too focused on one another. You had that moment with stay humble, all the sort of the tenseness on the pitch between these two teams. And Liverpool just kind of skedaddled behind them build up what seems to be an unassailable lead in the Premier League title. So, yeah, I think you're right, but I can understand why Arteta took a very serious approach to the season, because this was the one.
How does that help, though? Yeah, because the tense thing that Colin talks about, that's the problem.
No, I think it was different. No, he as a character is, but the way his team played, it wasn't like that.
But he's come back as a character. He's kind of retreated a little bit. Like, even about the, like, blaming other factors, he's kind of held fire a little bit over the last 2 or 3
months.
The
Gabriel setting off in the Bournemouth game was the start of him holding back a bit. Remember that at the Vitality? And he didn't say anything. And everyone was expecting another bombshell like last game. Saliba. And so you're right, like, he has held back. But I think, I just think they approached it incorrectly with, like you say, too narrow a focus on one opposition team. And I guess no one saw the Arne Slot bounce to this effect.
No, but I do think you can take all of this and say, well, that's been a very interesting learning experience this season. He's still a young enough manager. I'm not saying he's going to go on this big evolutionary phase or anything like that, but just in terms of how he might approach next season, if they finish second, if it's another Champions League quarterfinal defeat to one of the super clubs in Europe, it would not be a sign of progress at all. It would be stasis. But I still think there's a very strong case to be made, if they get a bit more luck with injuries next season, that they might be able to launch a better title challenge. And I would say absolutely this time next year they could be in a title conversation.
Can I ask what you think of them throwing out like a sudden 60 million bid for Ollie Watkins? Because I'm just wondering what you think the club is operating if they're doing that like suddenly in January, which is like very, very unlikely to work.
Yeah, and because like we were talking about, wasn't Ollie Watkins and Arsenal loosely talked about this time last year? Yeah. This is not a new thing.
No. And he said in 2020 and they never made a bid.
Yeah. But it Arsenal needing a striker is the most boring conversation talking point at this point, because we've been talking about it for 18 months. Though. But the club should know that this has been something that they needed for a long time. This should not be an emergency button.
It makes me wonder what the overall strategy is if they've gone this far, they haven't sealed it, and then it's like, you know, they're not even looking for like a good January deal where you get someone in and maybe they're a bit ahead of schedule. You know, the way clubs look at January generally, it's like pure panic. Who's the guy who everyone links us with? Let's just throw a load of money at that and see what happens. And look, it's not going to come true. So what will we do? Oh, back to square one. What can we do? We didn't get Ollie Watkins. And then you have like, it helps the fans, because the Arsenal fans, who, let's face it, have collectively lost their minds, especially online over the last few months, are kind of like, you know, making comments about like, you know, mid-table clubs hogging good players and things like that. Do you know what I mean? Like absolutely insanity stuff. But then maybe they're appeased and maybe that's all that matters. Maybe you're getting fans off your back a little bit or something. I wonder about the whole strategy at Arsenal. I really do.
Yeah, like what were they even thinking bidding Ollie Watkins at this time of year? There's no way that Aston Villa are going to accept that bid. It's crazy.
With the other striker in Saudi Arabia doing a medical at the time.
I don't know. Is it a case of Arsenal is that they're just... they have a fine wine like taste for strikers, like, and if they're not going to be good enough, they'd rather do without. You know, like I put to you a few weeks ago, and like Marcus Rashford, would you take him in theory? And like, no chance. And I'm thinking like Evan Ferguson, who this evening is linked with Chelsea before the deadline's out. Like, would you take a chance on Ferguson? At least he's an out and out striker. Or was like, no, if they're not going to be good enough and add goals to this Arsenal side, rather do without and rely on Kai Havertz and the lads to chip in. That feels like they're being incredible peak.
Yeah, I also don't really know what they want from their number nine. Like, we kind of look at these traditional out-and-out strikers. I'm not necessarily sure that's what Arteta wants to play with in his system.
That's a very good point.
Let's see how transfer deadline day. When is it, Monday?
It's the second, isn't it? So third, a bit of time yet to go
before we actually get there.
They're all seriously going for goals there. Jerry's going for 3-3 in that Arsenal City game as well. Like,
Arsenal aren't going to concede three.
No, surely not. No, John Duggan's gone.
That's it. I do actually. There's a part of this conversation where you get into the 10th minute and you go, we're unfairly down on Arsenal here. Yeah. They are having a decent season. They have been unlucky at times. You can't. I think they blame injuries too much. But we, as looking at it, cannot say that they missed Odegaard for the first third of the season and they've missed Saka for the middle third. They're their two most important players. Their defense has been brilliant. They're just not scoring enough goals. They're fine. It's just that we're talking about, like, right, is the manager, he's very good. Is he exceptional? We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Their transfer strategy, they're like, they've made some good signings. Do they have the right people to just take that next level? Are they title winners? Do you know what I mean? They have done a very good job to be where they are. You know, it's just next step stuff.
The context of the conversation is the opponent this weekend as well, and Manchester City. Let's have a look at Manchester United. They're at home to Crystal Palace this weekend. Phil Egan is calling a Crystal Palace 2-1 win. Colm, you're going for a United win. Shane, you're sticking to your guns with Manchester United this week as well. I'm going for a 1-1 draw, as is Mick. So, Colm, you've got on the optimistic side of things at Manchester United.
Yeah, 3 wins in a row now for Ruben's boys. As I said to you at the start, like, lads, you are terrible. You're actually the worst I've ever seen. Go prove me wrong. And they're on their way to doing it so far.
They aren't, though. There have been worse teams in the last 10 years. Like, there have been.
The last 10 years?
United have had worse squads in the last 10 years than the current squad. And I'm not saying the current squad is good by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, I think he was pretty spot on. Like,
the years where they had
a good side. Like,
if you know when they'd Radamel Falcao up front or Odion Ighalo, like they had some poor teams.
Yeah, they're
really like 6 years apart. Falcao was 2014.
I know, that's what I mean, but there have been various iterations.
Gallo was a squad.
Emergency
player. Yeah, he was a squad. And he did really well. Gallo, he scored goals.
Scored a couple of goals.
No, like, I didn't. Did he?
He did, yeah.
Not in the Premier League.
Huh?
Not in the Premier League.
He scored a couple of Europa League goals, maybe.
I did. He scored five goals for Manchester United, yeah.
Nobody watches Thursday nights.
You know what I mean? That's Patrick Kluivert form.
None in the
Premier League. You know what I mean?
None in the Premier League.
All Europa League, I'd say.
No, it is a poor side. Like, was it Andy Mitten said to us this morning?
He's seen much worse United teams.
No, he said they're Europa League standard. Last night is where they are.
They were good last night, but I was trying to figure out how bad the opposition were. You know, you're in that sort of situation.
Why the hell are they selling Garnacho? What's going on there?
I they shouldn't.
I don't think they will.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think his ability
for the second goal last night,
yeah,
the way he got that ball out of his feet.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even see the replay they're showing it from the cross on, but the way he gets that ball out of his feet, it's like, most players can't do that.
No.
You know what I mean? He is very good. I don't know if he's great yet, but he's got loads of time to develop into it. Don't get it.
It's unusual, isn't it? Maybe they're trying to sell Garnacho because he's a real bad influence on Rashford or something. And then Garnacho goes and it's like Rashford's back now and he's your left-sided forward. It's really strange, like, because Garnacho comes on last night, within 2 minutes hits the post from 1-1. He sets up Mainu, doesn't he, for that ball? He's a dangerous player. Like, he has his flaws, but like, so does every single Manchester United player in the last 10 years. Has major flaws. Like, their best player has been Bruno Fernandes, who wrecks the head of most United supporters. So, I think it'll be a very unconvincing but yearned for 3 points.
I'm interested in getting into this a bit deeper. You thinking that this isn't the worst Manchester United team of the last 10 years? Because I don't really know. What the answer is here?
What do you mean? Well, if you look at the current table, obviously.
Can we get a date and I can get an 11 up here?
The team that Ragnick finished with. I can't even pronounce his name. Ragnick.
I remember.
I think there were better players.
West Ham were coming up. If that season had been 3-4 weeks longer, I think United would have finished 11.
That was the last day of the season, was away at the Crystal Palace, that campaign, right? And Palace easily beat United.
Oh, yeah, they were falling apart.
I'm fairly sure that was a better side in paper than the one now. So Crystal Palace against Man United, the last day of the 21-22
season. That's the crucial thing, on paper.
Do you want to hear the team?
Is this it?
So, De Gea, Dalot, Lindelof, Maguire, Telles.
Alex Telles, remember him.
I think so far we're on course.
McTominay, Fred, Hannibal Medbury, Anthony Elanga, Bruno Fernandes.
That's a way worse
team. Edinson Cavani, the subs that came on.
Cavani, 60 years old.
Yeah. Mata, Garnacho, and of course,
Short tire.
Yeah, I thought you were using a mechanical term to describe the team.
Not a bad side
there, but a mix of youth and experience.
Yeah, Garnacho's about 7, like in that time.
Cavani's one of the best strikers we've seen in Europe.
I love Cavani, in fairness.
But this is the thing there. I gave the date to Owen to go against my own argument. But what date are you talking about?
Well, that
they're not what you were thinking about.
At least the one where Agallo is playing up front.
Yeah, but there's a couple of horrendous ones. That team is way worse than the current team.
Name another bad team.
What year are you talking there?
We have another recording here in 10 minutes.
There's probably 3 seasons in the last 10 seasons where you could say there's a worse team, starting team, than the current team. Like, Kobbie Mainoo. Like, how many of you...
Hold on, now.
The first thing I see here about Ole Ighalo, I was looking for his last game. Ole Ighalo, Manchester United loanee, bids emotional farewell. Was his farewell emotional?
Yeah, he was banging them in, left and right.
No, the fans...
5, he just said.
Don't let... 5 and how many games? That's the crucial context.
In the FA Cup and the Europa League.
Yeah, but how many games?
They count.
To be fair.
5 and 4, like, he was on fire, and he had to go.
He scored 4 goals in his first 3 starts for United.
Yeah, it's even...
Bad player, is he?
No, not a bad player, but the man was getting
they
on.
They brought him back from China, didn't they?
It was a weird signing.
He had been with Watford. And they signed
him. I know that.
They signed him on deadline
day. Dini,
almost this exact day 5 years ago, actually, they signed him.
Yeah.
And he was, exactly. He had a good partnership with Dini.
By results.
I feel that was a nasty thing to say. I don't want to diminish his emotion at leaving Old Trafford. Just to clarify that.
Just in case this week. But you have Mainoo and Fernandes in the team and Garnacho, like you just said, like, there's a lot of quality.
I don't know.
Dalot, best left wing back in the country.
Oh, Jesus. Right.
He wasn't. Remember when they had to move him last year, and it was like this complete disaster. That Ten Hag would say that Dalot, like, how can we win a match? We've got a right back playing left back. But he's been class. In fairness to him, you have to give him credit.
He's the new Ashley Young for United. He plays anywhere you want.
Then he does something stupid, like the Arsenal game, and he gets sent off. Stupid tackle. Could have lost that game, but knocked out of the cup. Like, he does silly things. But then, like, you look last night. Amorim is slowly getting, and he said at the start of the season, what I need to do is get some scrappy wins to give myself time. And all of a sudden now, they're getting a couple of wins. If they win again against Palace, I don't care. I think I said 3-2. Even if United play brutal and win 3-2, 2-1, that again gives Amorim a bit more time. And all of a sudden, you've Maynou in the number 10 position. Looked really good last night. Hoyland, I'm very worried about Hoyland and Xerxes. They can't get in the right positions, never mind score. You know, they're not your proper number nines. So.
Miguel Delaney said on Monday show, like, and I don't mean to be just saying this because I have been saying it, but I've been saying it on this for ages. It's like, buying Hoyland for that amount of money and putting him as your main striker when he was this up-and-coming player, it was the most crazy thing that I could possibly imagine. He's someone that is like, you buy him for the future and you try and develop him, or you leave him where he is and you buy him when he's a couple of years later. It's just everything that's wrong with United. It's like, oh, we've got a solution. We'll buy a 20-year-old who's never really done anything.
I'd also probably, like, and this, not a lot of United fans would say this, but I'd put Bayindir in goals probably before Onana some weeks, because Onana, I don't trust
some
him.
Some weeks?
Well, I'm basing that off Onana's performance in some weeks, because other weeks he's decent and he gets a 7 out of 10 performance. But Bayindir looks more solid. He actually wears the number one jersey, so it looks better as well, let's be honest. But I just think there's a number of positions in that United team that need fixed.
Let's move on to the final game this weekend, which is in the Women's Super League. It is Manchester City versus Arsenal. This is a repeat fixture of the opening day of the season. So, Colm, you're going for Manchester City win. I'm going for Arsenal, as is Mick. Shane, you're going for a draw.
I did not pick Arsenal to win this game. Did I?
Yeah, you did.
1-2, but...
2-1 to the Arsenal. Hits are drunk, like.
1-2.
You're picking them drunk.
I haven't actually been drinking, but I just feel like they were drunk picks.
The Chloe Kelly story is going to dominate this. Obviously, she can't play because she's at cup tie. She's moved on loan and not overly happy with Manchester City. She released a statement on Instagram. So disappointed to find out tonight that people at the club are briefing journalists against me if I'm to sign at a club before the window shuts. They've called reporters to assassinate my character and try to plant negative stories about me in the football media, of which is false accusations. I don't really know specifically what she's talking about here. But there's obviously been some negative coverage that she thinks is...
It was Manchester United she was linked with too, right?
Yeah. So that's pretty strong stuff from her. You'd imagine that she might not be returning to her parent club.
Doesn't look like it now, no.
No, but obviously not going to be a factor this weekend. Katie McCabe also not going to be a factor this weekend.
One game
talk about the Katie McCabe thing as well, though. Like, it's like, I don't know. Is it time that Katie McCabe got a little bit more mature in how she acts on a football field? I know part of her character and part of her... her strength as a player is how aggressive she is and how she gets in for tackles. And it's like, did Katie McCabe get a yellow card? Is that, that Twitter account and stuff like that? And there's a lot of that is fairly justified. But, like, getting booked and then screaming at the referee like that, and it's like, I remember when I was looking it up to kind of see what had happened, and it's like, the best tweet I said was, like, it was an Arsenal fan. It was just like, here's Katie McCabe at 29 years of age. You know what I mean? And it's just like, it's immature.
Emma's making
it's
a point that it was her first and second yellow card of the season, to be fair.
Also, though...
Okay, but that's a fair point, right? I didn't know that she hasn't she's been taking it easy this season, but it's not as if it was a massively out-of-character thing for Katie McCabe to do that last week. And it was in a huge game that followed another huge game this weekend that she's now going to miss, And I just think it's unfortunate, and it doesn't do her team a great service.
She can't change.
Emma's ranting outside. Like, I don't know. Ever attack Katie McCabe.
The latest thing.
No, she's saying it's a very Katie McCabe thing to get two yellow cards in a short.
You also can't take the character out of her game. Like, she's not going to change now. As you said, she's 29. She's not going to change her game. She's going
to
do this.
She doesn't have to change her game. She can change her general attitude of, like, screaming at a referee and getting booked.
That's just part of. That's her innate part of her game.
Like you said, the 29-year-old factor was held against her because she should be more mature. But the fact that she is 29, she's not going to change now. Like that. Like, if you take away someone's personality from the football pitch, they will start playing differently if they change her personality. She needs to play on the edge. Most of the time, it's not a problem. But it was a problem in the Wales playoff as well for Ireland when she was on the edge a lot. I thought she's not going to change, is she?
The table at the moment in the Women's Super League after last weekend has Chelsea 7 points clear of Manchester United, and then you've got Manchester City 1 point clear of Arsenal. So neither of these teams are going to win the league this year, turns out.
Chelsea are going to win the league, as we talked about last week. But this game was brilliant on the first day of the season at the Emirates. It was packed, and City, like, it was a really, really good game. City won, but their form hasn't been great, and they've ridiculous amount of injuries. So I kind of just think Arsenal might be able to do it in the opposite fixture.
You know that, you know that you're going for Arsenal to win.
Well, that's I've realised now that we've talked about it, what my thought process was. But then I going into this conversation, the reason I thought I probably had gone the other way was because I was ready for my, what the hell is Katie McKay missing this game for? You know, you miss it for a tackle, you miss it for something like that, that's part of football. I just think it's completely forgivable. It's just like that's it. That's just the price of doing business. Sometimes you get caught that way.
Yeah.
Whatever. For doing it, for just losing your temper, it's not like, sorry, I was going to say the word unforgivable. It's absolutely not unforgivable. What I mean is, it is a blight against you. You shouldn't be missing this game. You did it because you're immature.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Well, maybe you bring in the dissenter in Gaelic football. Katie McCabe. Well, there's a descent and bring it 50 metres up the pitch.
There's a 50 metre rule,
yeah. Maybe think it's 50 metres.
Yeah. Roughly.
Thanks very much for this afternoon. Great to spend some time in your company. Enjoy the football this weekend. We'll chat to you next week on Here You Got.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.